That war was an emergency, was on our mind every single hour of the day.
Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest for rights.
When they said, I'm black and I'm proud, that meant something.
It was the age of selfishness. It was the age of self-indulgence. It was the age of anti-authority.
It was absolutely exhilarating. It was the greatest time to be alive, ever, for sure.
The 60s was the last idealistic time.
My thanks to all of you, and now it's on to Chicago, and let's win there. Thank you.
I think an era ended with Robert Kennedy's death and Martin Luther King's, and doomed us for some time, and we may still be in that time.
I think Jack Newfield said it best when he said, after that we became might-have-beens, a generation of might-have-beens.
I think there's an amount of bitterness and animosity that our generation is going to carry to its grave.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. Well, we're talking about the 60s today. The 60s. A lot happened in the 60s, and we are seeing the footprints, the fingerprints, the big, huge presence of the 60s in our universities, in our streets, among our kids, in our politics, in our attitudes toward war, in our attitudes toward drugs. Shall I continue? It's had a huge impact on how America acts today. We are still reeling from the 60s. And so today we're going to be talking about that. A new book has been written called Stumbling Toward Utopia, how the 1960s turned into a national nightmare and how we can revive the American dream. So there will be some hope in this. Brings back a lot of memories for me because that was an era that I lived through, much of the turbulence. And I have some really, actually, it's like a knife in my heart. It also still makes me angry. I have a lot of thoughts about the 60s. So we'll talk about some of those today. Actually, abortion is one of those issues. Abortion came out of that free love movement and the whole notion that we were more important than we had. Our lives, ourselves, were more important than the children that we bore or any other cause. It was a selfish era, as Pat Buchanan said in that opening clip. It was a selfish era, and it has bled over today. Women's rights, me first. Pretty much that way. So now the left is really zealous for the blood of babies, going as far as supporting free abortions at the DNC. Remember that? Little trailer outside? Kamala's extreme radical stance for abortion is evidenced in her running mate. As First Things reported, Tim Walz supports the right to infanticide. Infanticide is the taking of a baby's life after birth. It's insanity. The media has dubbed this as the abortion election. We have to stand up to this evil. And when you join forces with Preborn, the largest pro-life organization in the nation, you're protecting the greatest victims in our society, babies in their mother's womb. Preborn's network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas in the nation, and they have rescued over 300,000 babies. When a woman considering abortion searches to end her baby's life, Preborn is there. The power of the ultrasound combined with God's love doubles a baby's chance at life. One ultrasound is just $28, and five ultrasounds are $140. If you'd like to donate, do what you've been doing all the months we've been together. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. Some of you may be new. This is a wonderful way to spend your money well during these dangerous times when we're having so much trouble pushing back on the abortion forces that have become so strong, their voices so loud. Preborn goes right to the mothers and makes the case with a picture of their baby. If you want to help, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, you're listening to Sandy Rios 24/7, and you know you can call us. It's 662-821-2040, 662-821-2040. You can send an email at sandy@afr.net. You can listen to the podcast on any podcast platform. AFR.net is our home base, American Family Radio. But you can listen on Spotify or Amazon or Apple, whatever you're connected with. You can also go to my website, which is sandyrios.com. It's easy to listen from there as well. All right, well, today is an interesting conversation with a good friend of mine out of Washington, D.C., on what happened in the 60s on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
America, to a large extent, has forgotten the 1960s.
Freedom, freedom.
There were strange things in the air, and they found their way into the music.
And the new music and the new poetry came out of a very oppressive social time.
It has been such a defining decade in terms of the consciousness of people living today. It is also a moment that's often misremembered.
You really felt that there was a country trying to understand itself, trying to create an identity.
When you think of the 1960s, the Voting Rights Act, 1965, the women's movement started with the Feminine Mystique, 1962. The gay rights movement, Stonewall Inn, that was 1969. There's a 1960 in front of so much of the problems that we're dealing with today, we started to deal with them then.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. Well, yes, the 1960s are remembered very differently by people. I have my opinion, but Tim Gagline has done a deep dive into the 60s, what it was like, what it did to our country, and how it's affecting us now. The book is called Stumbling Toward Utopia, How the 1960s Turned into a National Nightmare, and How We Can Revive the American Dream. Well, Tim Gagline is the Vice President for Extended and Governmental Relations at Focus on the Family. I've known Tim for years. I met him when he was working at the Bush White House, and I was President of Concerned Women for America. You've heard me interview Tim before. We have a great friendship, and Tim is a great historian. I love his books, and it's always a pleasure to interview him. And with that, good morning, Tim Gagline.
It's so great to be with you, and good morning, Sandy.
Yeah, okay, so I Googled the 60s because I thought maybe I needed to remember what they were about. I have to tell you, Tim, this is a real trigger point for me. So this discussion should be interesting because I did live through them and I have very strong opinions. I was Googling them and it talked about, it said how delightful, what a time of openness and discovery. And we discovered government corruption and unnecessary wars and all of the wonderful bells and whistles, the freedom that the 60s brought. That's not how I experienced it. I just wonder, first of all, where were you in the 60s? What were you doing then? Were you even born then?
Well, thanks for asking. I am born the last year of the baby boom, 1964. And in fact, Sandy, it's because of my birth year and having spent the last 40 years working here in Washington, D.C., as you referenced, 8 years in the White House for George W. Bush, 10 years in the Senate for Dan Coats, and the last 16 as one of the vice presidents at Focus on the Family. I travel a lot, about a third of the time for Focus on the Family. And to be very specific, in almost every instance where I speak, whether it's to a left-wing group, a right-wing group, non-ideological, these days, Sandy, with pinpoint predictability, at the end of my remarks or panel or debate, people will say something like, how did we get into this mess? Where did it come from? And all of these years, I've been hearing this. So I was on an airplane flying back from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and you know, on the airlines, they give you those little stacks of maybe the tiniest napkins in American history. And I started scratching out an outline to myself to answer this question, how do we get into this mess? And the answer that I kept coming back to, and all of my research has shown, and Stumbling Toward Utopia, my fourth book, is all about, is that it all points back to the moral and the social revolution of the 1960s. The American Revolution was never called the American Revolution by the colonists. It was called the cause. And I'm glad, because the more I've learned about the American Revolution, it's quite a conservative revolution. But we did have the American equivalent of the French Revolution. And as you said, Sandy, it happened definitively in the 1960s on into the 70s, and we are still living directly with the ramifications of this radical movement in 2024.
Wow. Well, I kind of lived through it, and I can attest to that, Tim. The thing that frustrates me is when people think so fondly of it, because that's not how I saw it. That's not how I experienced it. It was very distressing. It makes me mad. It kind of like there are things that mark you for your future. I'd say that living in Berlin, Germany during the Cold War was one of those things. But before that, living through the 60s and 70s, watching the riots, watching the Weather Underground, watching the rebellion, the Make Love Not War, the Woodstock, all of that marked me for what I was to do later. No question about it. But people need a good understanding of what we're talking about. Now, you've done it as a scholar. I've done it, I lived it. But I would really be interested to know, in general, how you would describe the 60s. Based on your research, how would you describe it? Is it, if it's possible, in a word or two or a sentence?
I'm happy to do that. And by the way, I've written a book, as you know, Sandy, that's for everybody. It's a book that's not meant to be academic. I purposely kept it under 200 pages. And so people, I think, will really enjoy this. And I can answer this very quickly. If you want to know where the radicalization and the revolution of the 60s came from, I found that you have to look to the turn of the 20th century. And frankly, a handful of people, President Woodrow Wilson, who said the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence was outdated, that checks and balances was outdated. He envisioned, he said, a country run by the experts. And he continually, in his presidency and before his presidency, really undermined the idea of what it means to be a citizen. Margaret Sanger, a contemporary, the founder of Planned Parenthood, a racialist, a eugenicist, a person who is profoundly uncomfortable with people who had children. John Dewey, the social engineer and architect of the revolution in education in America, and Roger Baldwin, the founder of the ACLU, a communist and a person who felt that our law and legal system was really yesterday's news. And what I do is I show the very direct line, Sandy, between these radical revolutionaries at the turn of the 20th century, and quite frankly, 50, 60, not more than 70 years later into the 1960s, all of their ideas in education, toward the family, marriage, parenting, human life, education, by the way, both higher education and elementary school, and of course, the sexual revolution. Alfred Kinsey, Masters and Johnson, Hugh Hefner, the pornification of America, all of it directly is tied to the bad ideas and the radicalization of the 60s.
You know, Tim, one other person I would add to that list, I mean, all of that's fascinating. I would add Dr. Spock. You know, Dr. Spock in the 60s was teaching, not to discipline your children, don't spank them, be friends. He totally created a parenting style that allowed for children my age to just completely rebel against parents and authority. But I want to know about John Dewey. I studied education. I was trained to be a teacher, And I remember his name coming up often, but it's been a long time. And I didn't end up going into the classroom except for a brief time. But what was his general philosophy that infected education? I really don't know.
Yeah, John Dewey is a must-know, and I highlight him heavily in Stumbling Toward Utopia, because he is, and his ideas are, the answer of what happened to our schools. By the way, Sandy, you know, whether you were here in Washington, Chicago, Philadelphia, Baltimore, New York, Los Angeles, up to and including the late 1960s, you could get a pretty good education in a public school. But by the time the Dewey-esque ideas were really coming to fruition, you know, revolution was ahead. And Dewey believed very strongly that faith and religion was the real enemy of education, that it was not about the formation of good character per se, that it was not about the formation of a citizen, that it was not about objective standards of right and wrong, good and evil. It wasn't about standards in reading, writing, arithmetic, basic science, biology. It was John Dewey who strongly favored shifting and reimagining, there's that word, that progressive favorite word, reimagining, the idea of American education along the ideas of social engineering to create the new student, the new citizen, and knowing that if you could fundamentally impact the rising generation of young students in education, you could ultimately have a transformed country.
Wow, that's really interesting. I didn't know any of that, Tim. So Roger Baldwin, I never heard of him either. Certainly I'm familiar with the ACLU. I didn't know he was the founder. And you say he was a communist, so that kind of explains to us what his goal was. But can you say something about, you know, what he wrote, what he actually did that laid the groundwork?
I would be pleased to do that. And in Stumbling Toward Utopia, once again, I focus like a laser beam on Roger Baldwin and the ACLU and their radical ideas. As I say, he was a communist. And you will find, and the reader will find in Stumbling Toward Utopia, that one of the common narratives, and not the exclusive narrative, I want to make this very clear, but one of the common narratives is, as with Roger Baldwin, is a great opening to Marxist ideas and neo-Marxist ideas, and the infusion in America of these European ideas, many of them Marxist, others communist, that eventually filter in through their work, using the law like a truncheon. You know, one of the ironies is that the First Amendment was defined and designed as a protector of people of faith, protector of religion in America. And the ACLU, Roger Baldwin, many others in this small coterie of radicals effectively has turned it around so that the First Amendment can ultimately be used as a truncheon, you know, against people of faith. And this is something that they advocated early on, very consonant with Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky, who was one of the most important radicals and one of the greatest influencers of the 1960s. You'll remember he strongly advocated targeting people with whom he disagreed, and he strongly advocated extreme polarization. And in many ways, the polarization that we see today, as with Roger Baldwin, is a direct result of the left advocating that kind of disharmony and discord.
Yes, he loved discord. And, of course, Saul Alinsky was Hillary Clinton's mentor. She knew him personally, wrote her master's thesis about Saul Alinsky. It's the things that he writes, and his, you know, his background was with the Chicago mob. And so he sort of, you know, he was happy with violence. And he was a dreadful character. It's really, honestly, Tim, the 60s are like a cavalcade of horrible stars. You know what I mean? I mean, there are more. I mean, we could talk about, you know, the declaration that prayer had to be coming out of the schools. That was, what, 1960, I think. There are so things. But, you know, I think, Tim, I don't know if you would agree. I don't think this was by accident. Maybe we could say it was the Yeah. I mean, and so we know, you know, the 50s was an era after the war prosperity. There was a lot of, spiritual renewal in the 50s, families going to church. It was a wonderful time after World War II. So, but we know that communism was intent on infiltrating and destroying. Do you see, am I seeing ghosts, or is that what you see after your research, that there was kind of a coordinated effort on some level to try to undermine American principles?
You are definitely not seeing ghosts or boxing at ghosts. In fact, quite the opposite. And may I say, Sandy, as I draw out in the book, some people would say, oh, gosh, it all started in the 60s. And what I'm showing in this book is that actually it didn't start in the 60s. Much of what we're talking about started at the turn of the 20th century and filtered down to the 1960s. So you're absolutely correct. And I think this is important, and I point this out in the book, and it's worth knowing that yes, you are absolutely correct that the post-World War II period, the 1940s, the 1950s, there is much and rightfully to admire about that period. Definitively, yes. But it's not an uncontested couple of decades. At the same time, that there was so much good happening in that period, and there was in America, the American century, it is also fair to say that the radicals were recognizing the kind of things that you and I champion and were actively, eagerly working to undermine them. And one of the things that I show in Stumbling Toward Utopia is that these handful of radicals, pre-World War II, post-World War II, they were very intentional, they were very proactive, they were very well-funded. And the most important thing, if I may say, my friend, that you have said in our interview together or conversation is that it didn't just happen. It was absolutely intentional. It's sort of like America was, in the phrase of Irving Kristol, mugged by reality. One of the wonderful reviews of my book said that I'm too nice in saying we stumbled toward the perfectibility of man, which is what utopia and progressivism stands for. He said, maybe I should have said it was a stampede toward utopia. But I actually think, to your point, that people were unaware, many people were unaware, even while they were living through this dawning radicalization.
Oh, there's no question about that. I mean, I know for a fact that, you do too, because it's history now, so many of the young people, the college students of that era, were completely co-opted by dark forces. They had no idea. The make love, not war, the hippies, the free love. I mean, a lot of it was just the natural tendency of kids to want to be free and do whatever they want. That's the way God made kids. They actually come out of your womb wanting to do what they want without kind of rules. And so they were enjoying that freedom. Sexually, it's very dangerous, but they weren't thinking about the dark things that Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers were thinking, the Weather Underground, who were actually wanting a revolution in the United States. But they were being guided by those forces and older ones. You know, so it's so insidious, Tim. It's a sad decade to me, actually. It just kind of still hurts to remember what I saw, because I lived through a time when it was school was honestly, academically, I came from a very small town, but we had a very rigorous academic program, and a lot of my kids, I lived in a town of 6,000, were very successful. They were academically successful, and they went on to be very successful, even though they were small-town kids, because that was the nature of education then. And to see all of that destroyed, I came back to the school in the 70s as a student teacher, and it had changed in just a decade. In the 70s, it had been completely destroyed. The academic rigor, the discipline, all of that, it started, right after the end of the 60s. Just sad.
Sandy, may I pick up on that very quickly? Just very quickly, because I think this is such a key point that you are making and live through. I show in Stumbling Toward Utopia that in 1960, 73% of all American young people were in non-divorced mother-father homes.
Wow.
73% in 1960. I show that by 1980, that number had dropped to 61%. And by 2015, that number had dropped to 43%. In 1965, Daniel Patrick Moynihan published a famous study on the Black American family. And Sandy, in 1965, Pat Moynihan found that 25% of all Black Americans were born out of wedlock. That number today is 73%.
Wow.
The number of Hispanic Americans today born out of wedlock, 53%. Today, 33% of native-born white people are born in America out of wedlock, and the majority of babies born to women who are 30 years of age and under are born out of wedlock. And so the sexual revolution and the revolution that you are describing that you lived through and which I animate in Stumbling Toward Utopia is absolutely real.
Yes, it is, and we just see it. The consequences, we could just see the disintegration. But on the other hand, Tim, you do point out there were some bright moments in the 60s, and we should mention them. So take it, sir. Take it. What are the bright spots in 1960s?
Well, I think broadly speaking, there are three bright spots. I think the Apollo space program, very important in American history. I believe that the computer revolution, not categorically terrific, but very important in very important in very subtle and overt ways. And of course, I think that racial relations pre the 1960s in America, had very, very, very tough moments and consequences. And I think that after the 1960s, it was more mixed, but overwhelmingly, there are measurable and important improvements. And I conclude in the book that I'm a hopefulist. I really am. In fact, I'm an inveterate optimist. And I think that having arrived in 2024, I believe, Sandy, that restoration and renewal is possible. I think there are large numbers of Americans, and especially in the rising generation of young Americans, who have lived through an enormous amount of brokenness and unevenness, and they actually want something better. And even in a time where we have record low marriage and fertility, I believe that this generation is not of a piece, and that there is a remnant that wants something different. And I think there are a lot of measurable bright spots in our country and culture, and I think we have to focus on those as well.
Yes, and of course, as we draw the lines between what happened in the 60s, and we didn't really say it, we inferred it, but we are living truly, as you make the point in your book, Stumbling Toward Utopia, that we're living, we are the direct recipients of what happened during that era. It was really a dismantling of our culture, of our faith, of our belief, of our structure. I think also, Tim, that the birth control was discovered then, and that's why that set the groundwork. The birth control pill came out, and that's what set the groundwork for the ability to have endless sex with endless partners, and there's so many factors. It almost, and I know you believe this, it's like it's supernatural. I mean, the men can make their plans, but it does seem like there was a supernatural force bringing all those things together to create this destruction. I know you believe that. And so what do you think about the spiritual aspect of it, Tim, and the part that it would play in the redemption, coming back, pulling the country back?
I deal with the spiritual part of the 1960s, Sandy, in a very direct way in Stumbling Toward Utopia. I show how the progressives had a plan, first to overtake the seminaries, and secondly, to mesh themselves into the old Protestant main line. And I actually demonstrate in Stumbling Toward Utopia how the seminaries were progressivized, taken over, and ruined, and how many of the old Protestant mainline denominations have been hollowed out. And frankly, in a country of 350 million people, I think it's fair to say that the old Protestant mainline, because of its choice not of Christian orthodoxy, but because of heterodoxy and progressivism, really, in many ways, destroyed and undermined themselves. But what I also show is that there are alternatives. This is not like the rest of the developed world. And in the United States of America, unlike most countries in Western Europe, Christianity and the Judaic Christian tradition is alive and well. And it looks very different than it did as a result of the revolution. But I believe very strongly, that the number one problem facing America today is not rooted in the economy or the border, as big as those things are. And I demonstrate in Stumbling Toward Utopia that in contemporary American life, the number one issue that we face is a spiritual crisis of the first order. And progressivism of the 1960s infused into America almost a tangible, destructive moral relativism and nihilism that bedevils us, even today. And the great news is that there are large numbers of Americans who reject that. And my sense is that the progressivism that the 60s radicals thought was, in fact, the American coming utopia has been exposed mostly as a failure. And I think people are increasingly waking up to that, and they want something better and different.
I totally agree with you, Tim. And that's why I'm optimistic. And just praying that God will have mercy on us as a country, and that we can actually not just we can reach other people that haven't figured this out yet, who are still godless and wandering and really living lives that are aimless and destructive. And so the book is excellent. It's Stumbling Toward Utopia. It's how the 1960s turned into a national nightmare and how we can revive the American dream. He is always the optimist, my friend Tim Gagline. But his writing is excellent and his points are well. Tim, I really appreciate this book because just putting all of these pieces together in my mind after having lived it is very helpful to me. It's just pretty overwhelming. So thanks and great job done. You can get the book, I guess, anywhere where books are sold. Stumbling Toward Utopia by Tim Gagline. All right, Tim, thanks a lot. We appreciate you joining us. This is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
We're facing a time right now where, during the election of 2024, there are many issues on the ballot in several states to make abortion legal for all 9 months. Oh, it doesn't say that, but it does say that with the language. They're removing parental consent. They are encouraging women to take the life of their babies. They're encouraging the distribution of the abortion pill. It's a sad situation we're facing. And I really honestly believe the best way to fight back is something redemptive. And something redemptive is showing the moms their babies in the womb. What could be more redemptive? What could be more beautiful? And you know what? It actually works. So if you'd like to help Preborn provide those ultrasounds, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Hi, it's Sandy Rios, your old friend from the morning show. So many crucial and frightening events are unfolding before our eyes that we have decided to re-engage with the daily news on Sandy Rios 24/7, as we once did in the mornings. I want to invite you to come over to the podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, so that we can work our way through these difficult times together. Just go to AFR.net or any podcast platform. You can also find Sandy Rios 24/7 at sandyrios.com. And one more thing, a fun thing. My book, God's Velvet Hammer, is now on Audible. Sometimes listening is better than reading. I recorded it in my own voice, which makes it even more personal for all of you who know me so well. Audible books are available on Amazon.com. God bless each and every one of you for your faithfulness to Him. My prayer is that as we stand together in this battle, we can finish well.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
From the underground, that radical left-wing group, the Weathermen, has claimed responsibility for yesterday's dynamiting of a statue of a Chicago policeman. The group promises more attacks on the establishment around the entire country starting next week. The medium for this message was a tape recording, reputedly by the fugitive Weatherman leader, Bernadine Dorn. It came by mail this morning in New York to the Youth International Party, the Yippies, who invited newsmen to hear it. And our Ben Silver was there as the tape was played.
Sisters and brothers, a year ago we blew away the Haymarket pig statue at the start of the youth riot in Chicago. The head of the Police Sergeants Association called emotionally for all-out war between the pigs and us. We accepted. Last night we destroyed the pig again. This time it begins a fall offensive of youth resistance that will spread from Santa Barbara to Boston back to Kenton, Kansas. Now we are everywhere. And next week, families and tribes will attack the enemy around the country. We are not just attacking targets. We are bringing a pitiful, helpless giant to its knees. We invite Key and Nixon and Agnew to travel in this country. Come to the high schools and campuses. But guard your planes, guard your colleges, guard your banks, guard your children, guard your doors.
Can you verify that the voice is that of Bernadine Dorn?
Yes, I'm her sister, and I'll verify that it's her voice.
What is your first name, sir?
Jennifer.
Are you going to turn this information over to the police?
Well, I assume they already have it, since we've used our phones here. I mean, it's open knowledge. This is their statement.
How do you feel about what your sister is advocating?
I think it's right on. I think she's far out, and all Weathermen are far out.
Could you explain that?
There are brothers and sisters in the underground.
They're forced to be outlaws by the way the society is run, and we think they're great.
Okay. Well, let's just see. This is Bernadine Dorn. That's the voice that you heard. That was Walter Cronkite at the beginning of the broadcast. Bernadine Dorn was a terrorist, along with her now husband, Bill Ayers. That was her voice that you heard. By the way, it's hard to find this on the internet now. There was a PBS documentary on this years ago that I stumbled on. It was in... Anyway, we pulled the whole thing. I was on radio in Chicago, and it was a fascinating telling. The Weather Underground were revolutionary, really communists, beginning in the 60s, and then they ended up in jail. They killed people. They did all kinds of terrorism. They planted bombs. They killed a policeman, I believe it was. And you heard her say in that that brief declaration she made to her followers, and to the public, the pigs, you know, we're at war with the pigs. She's, of course, talking about policemen. And she said, we're going to bring the helpless giant to its knees. She's talking about the United States. She and Bill and the Weather Underground wanted complete revolution. They wanted to destroy. They wanted the overthrow of the United States of America. I remember them actually saying that. When Charles Manson and his family did all of the murderings in Southern California, Bernadine Dorn thought that was just cool. We have her on tape talking about that. She said they stuck a fork in they stuck a fork in one of the victims, and then she thought that was just cool. This is Bernadine Dorn. Now, okay, so why am I spending time on this? Well, because Bernadine Dorn spent the last years of her career, and I mean many years, after being in prison, as a law professor at Northwestern University in Evanston. Bill Ayers, on the other hand, she was the leader of the Weather Underground. He was like her second in command, her comrade. Then they got married, and Bill Ayers became a professor at the University of Illinois Circle Campus in Chicago. And Bill Ayers began to write college textbooks on education. Bill and Bernadine, communists, revolutionaries. I think it was Time Magazine did a featured piece on Bill Ayers on 9/11. It was a full-page spread. It actually came out that morning, 9/11 of 2001. And it shows a picture of Bill in a suit standing on the American flag. And the title is something like, Guilty as Hell, Free as a Bird. So that's Professor Bill Ayers. And by the way, he and Bernadine became very close friends to Barack and Michelle Obama. So my point is just to tell you, apart from all the Tim and I just talked about, the connections with the 60s and with what's happening in our country now go so deep. Bill Ayers' textbooks were so infecting, they even found their way to Wheaton College. I actually took them on when I was on radio in Chicago for that. How could you do that? How could you do that? And yet they did, and so did others, because it was the thing to do. It was the textbook to read. So this poison continues, of course, as you can see, even though the hippies of the 60s and 70s are getting older and they're dying. That's my generation, and you know, and everyone has to die, but in that way, where they've infected colleges and universities, because when they did not win in the streets and they did not complete their revolution, because they didn't, it kind of took a nosedive in 1968 in Chicago again. Chicago, when the 1968 Democratic Convention took place, and there was a great protest, violent protest by the left and by students who were anti-war, anti-Vietnam War. You know, it's a whole umbrella of causes. But Mayor Daley of Chicago just, let's just say, put them down. There was violence by the police. They stopped the protesters. They stopped their violence. They did what police used to do, actually. And that kind of was a turning point for that radical generation in the 60s. But they didn't disappear. They just went underground. And Bernadine was in, I think, prison until the 80s. And then many of them, you know, shaved their beards and went into colleges and universities to be professors. And there they still are. And they are the ones, for the most part, that have spread the poison that has poisoned your children and grandchildren. So there's much more to say about the 60s, but I hope that explains. And I think one other thing that came out of the 60s and maybe the 70s would be the Jesus movement. You know, God was at work then. Of course he was. And there were millions of Christians who were very concerned about what was happening in the country. The country was divided then between people who still loved the country and loved, you know, the good things about America and were fighting for that and sort of stunned to see what was happening in the streets, just not aware. But it was a small group of people who were revolting. And now the thing that's changed now is we have a much larger group of college students and other people who are following the same pattern as people who revolted in the 60s, but there are more of them now in our country, so that's the big difference. Nevertheless, there's nothing God can't do. I believe God is getting a hold of people. Even on college campuses, you know, there's been revival this past few years. Not a lot of them, but many of them. And so we hope in God. We always do. But this book will help you understand it all, Stumbling Towards Utopia. I hope that you will buy it and enjoy it. I want to thank our sponsors. Timothy Plan is a place where you can put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.